You know, if you're thinking about polyamory, that's taking a step off the relationship escalator already. So why put yourself back on it with this idea that you have to have one partner who then becomes the father of your children, who you stay with forever? Like, there's some conflicting kind of narratives here. Hi, welcome back to another episode of KCRW's How's Your Sex Life? I'm your host, Maisha Battle. I'm really excited to dig into all of your juicy questions today, and I'm going to be doing that with a fellow sexologist, author, and intimacy coach, Elle Chase. Elle and I have connected on Instagram before, and it's so nice to finally be in conversation today. Elle, thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yay. I'm really excited to team up to help our listeners have some better sexual experiences.
Yes, some better connection.
Yes. So I want to ask you one question before we get started. Mm-hmm. And that's, how's your sex life?
You know, my sex life is exactly where I want it to be.
Love
at
that.
The moment. It's intentional. And for the first time, I've decided not to prioritize my sex life because I have a bunch of other huge life stuff going on. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not going to worry about this. If I want to have sex, I'll have sex with myself. And when I'm ready to deep dive back into it, I will do it. So it's a great place to be, to make the choice of that and just know that, you know, it'll come back when it comes back. And, you know, and I can start to prioritize it when I want to prioritize it. So
just like anything else in life.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think people, we're probably going to get a sense of this in the questions today, but I think people get a lot, like, really freaked out when they feel like sex has been deprioritized in their lives and they fear that that it won't come back. You know, that this is just the way that it is.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, you know, sometimes we're not great friends to our friends, but then we come back to it, and, you know, we put that energy in, and we do what we have to do, and we make our amends, and we, you know.
Yes. Like. Yes. Well, you know, it's, I think when we look at our sex life often, we don't give it the grace that we'll give other things in our lives. Like, why should our sex life be any different than our enthusiasm for, you know, going camping, if you like camping, or doing anything, or just seeing that one particular friend, or getting together, or having dinner parties, or, you know, I'm doing surface things, but you know what I mean? It's just a part of life, and all parts of life wax and wane. And it's just a part of being human and living in the world.
I agree. Yes. I love that. Thank you for sharing that, because I think it's a big, important way to jump off this conversation.
Oh, good. Yes.
All right. Let's dig into our first question. And as a reminder, the questions you'll be hearing are voiced by actors, not the question askers.
I'm in love with a cowboy. Help. I've been dating the same guy for 5 years. We're best friends and in the same professional network. He knows all my family, friends, and coworkers. However, for several years, I've felt the pull to be non-monogamous, but he has always refused my request. 3 years ago, I fell in love with a cowboy, but I repressed my desires to sleep with a stud in order to stay with someone more reliable and consistent. Since then, I have pined over other men and women, but felt if I broke up with my partner, I would lose a connection I care about. I also have not stopped thinking about the cowboy and regret missing that wild ride. Most recently, my partner has been gone working abroad for 3 months, and I'm starting to go crazy with desire to sleep with other people. Many of my friends tell me to dump him, but I'm afraid of losing his friendship, and I'm also afraid I won't find another good guy to settle down with as I'm in my mid-30s. Help!
Ooh.
Wow. That's a big one. I mean, I have an answer, but it's not like a quick, like, this is what you do answer. You know what I mean?
Oh, we're not here for that. We're here for the thought journey. So take us on yours.
The first thing that popped into my head is partnership is a choice. It's not based, as far as I'm concerned, in my own personal opinion, partnering up with somebody is a choice. You can love them. You cannot love them. Marriage, partnership, all of that is a construct. Okay. That being said, it is one that we are very familiar with, attuned to. It is how our society seems to work right now to that degree. So if this partnership is not fulfilling you on a level that is inherently important to you, not just like, I'm in this stage where I just want to fuck around, like really get curious and introspective about what it is that you feel that you're missing and why. I mean, I definitely get coaching and therapy around this as well, because both in tandem would be excellent for this. But also waiting, like worried that you're not going to partner up with somebody else. Why is that important to you? Why is having a partner important to you? And I'm not saying that from a judgment place. I'm saying that like, no, really, like, what are you afraid of if you don't have a partner? You know, there are many, many, I'm seeing it at least, women over 40 who are leaving marriages, leaving lives that they thought that they were going to be in for the rest of their lives. They had everything set and they were happy, they thought. And then suddenly something happened in their life and they're like, I don't want this anymore. And it's scary to say that and to leave something, that devil you know, that friend, that companion, for something else. But for some women, it becomes untenable to be in a partnership that stagnates and is not allowing them to grow in the way that they feel they need to grow as an individual. So my feeling for this person is there needs to be a lot of introspection and a lot of figuring out if this is the fantasy of being non-monogamous or, you know, having an affair or being with a cowboy. I mean, I think that that's also very telling that that's what she's describing. Yeah. I'm assuming it's she. It feels very, it's like, I'm in love with a Playboy bunny. Yeah. I'm in love with a stripper. Help, you know, I'm in love with, you know, God. I mean, you know, a rock star or anything like that. There is a fetishization there. That's the wrong word, but I can't think of the other word.
They're archetypes.
Objectification.
Yeah, and it's yeah, for sure.
And that is telling to me in the way that she describes it. So I would just say, please, oh, please, oh, please, discover where this is coming from with someone who is objective and a professional who can help you parse what is going on inside you.
I agree. I agree wholeheartedly. And, you know, going back to the beginning of the question, this is someone who has maybe multiple times brought up the fact that they were curious about opening their relationship and polyamory. That may be coming from, you know, a real identity that they hold, and they owe it to themselves to investigate that. Otherwise, they risk repeating the same things. Do we know that the cowboy wants to be non-monogamous?
Do they know how difficult it is to be non-monogamous and how much work it takes to be poly? I mean,
there's that part. There's definitely that part. But I do think, yeah, there's a lot of like fantasy here, untested theories about oneself, desire, a lot of longing that's coming through. And we have to get to the bottom of that. So, yeah. Just you've made some observations, question asker, about who you think you are, and now's the time to investigate if those things feel really true to you. And if so, that's going to have some really solid consequences for you and your current relationship and any other relationship you have in your future. I would say, I mean, I work with so many women in their 30s who come with a lot of anxiety about how they're going to form a family if they're single forever or whatnot. And the point is, there are lots of ways to start a family on your own, or, you know, single parent by choice, but then later start focusing on dating. Your priorities will be very different in a partner when you have a child.
Absolutely.
You know? So we don't want to get boxed in to the, you know, if you're thinking about polyamory, that's taking a step off the relationship escalator already. Mm-hmm. So why put yourself back on it with this idea that you have to have one partner who then becomes the father of your children, who you stay with forever? Like, there's some conflicting kind of narratives here that you're living with. And that's deeply uncomfortable and can definitely make people feel like, ah, I've got to just make a choice that's going to blow up my life. So,
Well, you know, what's interesting is, oddly enough, I had a very similar situation that did blow up my life, but in a good way.
Oh,
when I was married and we were in a sexless marriage, and I just sort of like lost it one day. And I'm like, I've never experienced passion. And I don't want to live the rest of my life without that. And I left my husband. Hmm. Now, for me, that was the right choice. But there is nuance in everything. And when giving advice, it's like there is an inner knowing, and then there is a feeling. And the more you know yourself, the more you'll be able to tap into what is true for you in a path that you want to take. Because again, like, if you want to open up your marriage, and that might be the paradigm that works for you in relationships.
Yeah.
And you might want to explore that. Or maybe it's a passing fancy, but you won't know until you explore it. And going to therapy and coaching together, I think, is the way to go.
I agree. Yes. Yeah. Let's move on to our next question, which is from someone who is dealing with a sexless marriage.
That's a hard one.
Mm-hmm. I'm constantly reminded by my married and unmarried friends about their active sex lives. I've been married for 7 years with someone I've been with for 17 years. It's a sexless marriage, unless it's for having kids. And my wife finds the topic uncomfortable to talk about. How common is this?
Well, it's extremely common, as far as I'm concerned, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. One of the top concerns. And I would say there's like degrees of sexlessness.
Yeah.
We could talk about that. So this person does not actually qualify how long it's been, right? They just say it's a sexless marriage, right?
Yeah, sexless unless it's for procreation.
Yeah.
So yeah, that would be it. And there isn't any information about, it doesn't seem that it's an attraction thing or anything. So just my first blush on this would be, I think we were talking about this earlier, is the idea of what is sex for you? What is the sex you want to have? And what is sex for you? And then think about, how is that possible with your partner? How can we get back into that? And I think the communication as a lubrication of talking about it, even though their partner seems to be a little skittish, I think it's one of those things that, as part of a partnership that you're spending your life with someone, I mean, 17 years is a really, that's a commitment. That's a long time.
Yeah.
And, to expect that your sex life is going to be raucous and alive and happening at, you know, anticipated intervals during the month or week or whatever is unrealistic and something that is perpetuated by media. And, you know, like women's magazines and, you know, anything we see, because, you know, it's sexy to think that everybody's having sex all the time. But the fact of the matter is life gets in the way and we start to deprioritize sex. And that's fine. Just like I was saying before, like, I've deprioritized it as a choice, but if you really want it and you want that connection and that intimacy with your partner, I think there are ways to connect with your partner, to start to connect on an intimate level that will sort of birth, as it were, more of a physical attachment. And so what I tell people is, what did you guys used to do before to get close? What was it in the beginning, besides forget about being horny, like just forget about that. What did you used to do? Did you snuggle? Did you hold hands when you walked down the street? Did, when you walk by your partner, did you, you know, do you used to rub your hand down their back? Little things like that communicate to us on an inner level that we're desired, we're wanted, that someone's thinking about us, that someone wants to connect with us. They're making a bid for connection. And that's where I would start, because sex is such a broad term and it can be so many different things for so many different people. Mm-hmm. And that might be something without even having to bring up the subject that one starts and then just say, you know what, I would really like to connect with you more physically. And don't put any sort of definition on it. Like, I'd like to plow you like three times a week. Like, I don't know if I'd say that. I might just say, I want to connect with you more on this intimate level. It's something I miss. And can we just start by like maybe a couple of times a week, Tuesdays and Thursdays, where we have a time where we just sit and snuggle in bed and we can talk about our day or whatever, or whatever. And then just sort of go from there. I mean, starting slowly, especially when you've been in a long-term relationship that hasn't seen sex, and I'm using quotes for that, in a long time, starting slowly and how you would start getting close to somebody again is my advice.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I had a conversation yesterday with someone who really was feeling very similar to this person, and I think feeling a lot of pressure to restart and have their sex life look like it did before, and was fully prepared for me to say, well, yeah, get on that. You know, what's the big deal? Yeah. What's the problem here? And the real concern was, well, we're not even cuddling. You know, we don't even kiss. We don't even hug anymore. And so oftentimes what goes unsaid, I've noticed, is that we're not just dealing with sexless, but we're dealing with touchless marriages, because touch and physical connection have been used sort of as this proxy to show sexual interest. And so there's an avoidance there of like, I don't even want to touch you, because I know when you touch me, that what you're really saying is you want to fuck me.
Yes.
So it, you have to rewire. So that's why I think it's really wonderful that you brought that in. You have to rewire and rethink physical connection from the very beginning. You know, what did we do without a lot of expectation before? You know, that it just came naturally in the relationship.
I think that's such a great point that you just brought up, because it is something I hear too with whenever they touch me, I know they want sex. I know that's what they're doing. And so for the person who's doing the touching, who wants to reach out, to almost for them to deprioritize sex and prioritize making their partner feel loved and from there feel wanted without any expectations. And, you know, I find it helpful too to say, can you say that to your partner? Can you say, I have no expectations. I just want to feel your skin, and I just want to hang out with you and just cuddle. And it really, again, the rewiring, it really makes a huge, huge difference for a lot of people that now I'm being touched because this person wants to touch me and I don't have to do anything for it.
Yeah. And that brings me to my next point, because I do think there's a gender issue here. And I know you like talking about the gender aspects of these things, as I do. What I've seen, too, is that a lot of men, and I'm assuming that this question asker is a man based on some of the identifiers here and sex for procreation.
That's what I assume, too. But, you know, exactly.
And so I think men are socialized to get their touch needs met through sex.
Yep.
And so what you're saying makes so much sense. It's almost like helping this person understand that not only do they have more avenues for connection than mm-hmm. sex, but they have more to offer than sex.
Yes. It is taking the focus off of something that is so focused on, especially for, you know, cishet men, that is so goal-oriented, and to flip the switch and go, what if there wasn't a goal? What if the goal was just to be happy and to feel good? Because really, you know, mm-hmm. it just doesn't have to be an orgasm. It doesn't have to be. And it's so orgasm-focused, our world, when there's so much enjoyment. Like someone said something the other day about, you don't take a hike to get to the top of the mountain. You take a hike to see what you see on the way to the mountain. And then you come back down. And it is that reframe, I think, would be most helpful to men, sharing that hike together and insight and exploring something new together, instead of just, let's get to the top of the mountain as fast as we can,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Because that's what we need to feel close to each other.
That's right.
We've got to do this. We've got to check
this box. I've been habituated.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Which doesn't sound like very much fun.
No, look, I can do that on my own.
Yeah. Really.
I mean, that's what vibrators are for.
Right.
You know, you have a wand that'll get you there in 2 seconds. And then you have the more sensual toys that will let you linger in that, you know, subspace of just erotic enjoyment. And, you know, everyone has moods.
Yeah. Well, what you said earlier about like, oh, the invitation to, I just want to touch your skin and be close to you and cuddle with you. Like, that's hot, you know? There's a lot, as you just described, that can be erotic mm-hmm. and, you know, sex adjacent that may in effect, you know, question asker, get you to the place of sex, but I don't want you to have that as the destination. Yeah.
No.
But it could result in some fun, erotic entertainment.
Yeah. And do yourself the favor of giving yourself that experience of discovering new ways to get turned on.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to hear from a woman who's noticed her dating pool has gotten a little too young for her taste. Ella's sticking around for that, so stay close. All right, we are back. Let's hear what our next listener has to say.
I and other boomer women are getting approached by Gen Z for dates, which makes no sense to us. Since when is dating someone your granny's age sexy? I've found lots of bewilderment about this in online forums on the part of Boomer and Gen X women. What's it all about?
God, I love this question.
What's it all about, Elle?
What's it all about? I think I just have theories.
Okay.
I am Gen X, and when I'm dating, I get guys, like, I do not get guys my own age online or whatever. And I don't get approached by men my own age. I get approached by men in their 30s, sometimes even younger, in their 20s. And I just go, okay, you know, sure. I think that there is a very sexy part of aging that people never tend to really think about. And that is confidence and experience that comes with an older woman. And I don't think that that is something that can be tossed aside, because when I have asked my dates, like, so you like older women, what's the deal? Like, oh God, I just find it such a turn on that they know what they want. They are usually really good in bed, and I can talk to them. Like, they have stuff to say. And I thought, well, those are very good reasons. And it all comes down to two. I think people find it so hard to believe because we're in such a youth obsessed culture, which is also a very, you know, body normative, able-bodied sort of culture where you have to look a certain way, which is, you know, usually white, thin, you know, light hair, athletic, something like that. That's the message I was getting when I was growing up. And it's just not, that's just not what everybody finds attractive. In fact, many, many, many people find older older partners super sexy, super interesting. And I think the only issue that comes up in the people I talk to and the people that I will date is it's not super, super interesting for me.
Yes, there's two sides to this coin.
There's two sides to it. I don't, if I want a hookup, great. But I don't find, personally, the younger men that I have, and I'm not even going to say dated because they really were just like friends with benefits. I'm just like, okay, yeah, I have to go through the talk and then I'm going to have to sort of teach them a little bit. And they're not comfortable and they're doing the porn sex. And it's like there is a comfortability and a beauty that comes with experience and age, just life experience.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's part of it too. But I think initially it's just like, yeah, it's hot. They know what they want. They're confident, you know. I don't know. That's my feeling.
Oh yeah. No, I mean, yeah. in my research, this was actually a question that was emailed to me directly because I wrote a piece about Gen Z and dating, and so I kind of just poked around and there's Reddit forums for people who are like, yeah, these are the things that I'm attracted to when I'm matching with you. It's because of this and those exactly the same things that you mentioned. You know, experience. Sexually confidence in themselves, know what they want, are not focused on the things that younger women are focused on, i.e. getting married, having kids, etc. Takes mm-hmm. a lot of the pressure off of these men mm-hmm. to not be dating for that purpose.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So lucky them, you know?
Yeah.
I'm an elder millennial, some real cuspy Gen X millennial.
Yeah.
So we also grew up with the American Pie movies. Mm. And Stifler's mom, the actress Jennifer, help me out, somebody.
Coolidge.
Coolidge.
Yes.
She has said, like, that role gave her access to a sex life that she had never experienced before. Playing the role of Stifler's mom opened so much for her. And she mm-hmm. she took advantage of that. I think she said after that series of movies, or, you know, during the course of, like, those movies coming out and her appearance in them, she had sex with, like, 200 men, I think, was the
God bless
quote.
Her.
So she's like, yeah, I just, this was really, it really helped me out. And it was fun. And there is, I mean, that character is incredibly, she embodies the Mrs. Robinson, the mm-hmm. I will teach you, I have a lot to give, and I have a lot of just, like, seething sexual mm-hmm. energy, which I think, like, to this question asker seems like they don't identify with that. You know, they right. don't see themselves as this, you know, sex kitten honeypot who's right. just, you know, looking for a younger man to seduce. She's just like, I'm just out here being me trying to date. So to me, what's happening there is a lot of projection, you know, because mm-hmm. you look a certain way and you are a certain age, you must be mm-hmm. Stifler's mom mm-hmm. or you do have these qualities that I'm looking for. So, you know, that's one of the drawbacks, I guess, to online dating.
Yeah.
Is that, you know, you're kind of looking around for something and seeing, oh, yeah, this might be the mommy I'm looking for.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, you have to really know what kind you're going to
yeah.
get, you know, because you never know. It's sometimes it is a mommy thing or sometimes like a fetishization mm-hmm. situation, or it could just be a preference. One of the things, like, I will tell people who I coach for body image is that who are you to tell someone what they're attracted
right.
to? just because you have made a judgment based on all the information that has come in through your software does not mean that that is the way for everyone. Yeah. It's just like art. You know, some people like de Kooning. Some people think it's awful. Some people like Pollock. Some other people think that it's just, you know, throwing paint on a board, that it has to be Caravaggio or fine art or whatever to be beautiful. And that's just not the way life works. So I think it's the same for people that don't see themselves as being attractive enough to get the quote unquote younger man, which for many on the surface would seem to be a feather in one's cap. But it just depends what you want. Like if you want a companion that you have sex with, that you can travel with, and then they go home at night, then maybe that's not great for you. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's so much nuance there.
Yes. I want to direct people to Cindy Gallup's TED Talk because it definitely correlates.
Yep.
With your experience, one of the reasons why she started Make Love Not Porn, which is fantastic, everyone should check it out, is because she was, I think, in her 50s, maybe had just turned 50 at the time, and was very open about dating men in their 20s, but noticing that they really were learning how to have sex through porn. And enacting those things out in the bedroom, and it really took her by surprise. So, again, that's something to maybe be cautious of. Hashtag not all not all Gen Zs, not all 20s. You know,
right, but yes,
you know, men in their 30s, men in their 40s at this point have grown up with porn depictions and have modeled how they have sex with their partners from that. So, you know. Hopefully we're getting away from that, but.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love porn. I used to have a porn site where I curated porn images, you know, but it is not education.
No.
It is not a way. It's entertainment. But yeah. And Joan Price is another one to sort of check out. She's much more sex education, how to be, you know, a sexual person in your 50s and onward. Anyway.
Resources. Yes.
Resources.
It's real. It's out there.
And it's happening a lot.
It's happening a lot. It's very common. Absolutely. So, yeah. Now we've given you some things to think about, question asker, and you can decide if you would like to engage or not.
That is right. You have the choice.
Exactly. Okay. Those are all the questions that we have, but I have a question for you to kind of round us out today. We've had such a great conversation already, but I'm really curious about any big sex myths that you would like busted. Like anything that you think if everyone knew this, we would be out of a job, you and I.
Oh, I think that if people, I think we touched on this in the beginning, but if people knew that it was totally normal, again, I hate that word, but it's totally normal, totally fine to have differences in desire, to go up and down periods of your life where you don't want to have sex. And you don't have to have sex the way you've been having it if you don't enjoy it. That you should be having sex that you enjoy. And that if sex for you is just like, yeah, it's fine, you know, let's talk about why it's just fine. What kind of sex do you want to have? What kind of sex would be exciting for you and that you'd look forward to? But I think definitely desire discrepancies also, especially for women in menopause, perimenopause, and having men understand that and go about things differently. Mm-hmm. I would have to become like a librarian somewhere. I wouldn't be able to make a living.
It sounds like a nice, like, second life, you know?
It's a nice second life, but we're fighting the good fight.
Yes. You and I are in the trenches every day.
In the trenches. Damn it. Somebody's got to do
it. Sexual trenches.
Damn it. Oh, my God.
Well, thank you so much, Elle. I really appreciate your thoughtful take on the questions that we got today. But before we go, where can people find you? Either on the internet, in person, if you're doing any events that you have lined up.
They can always find me on Instagram at the L Chase, E-L-L-E, or on my website at lchase.com.
Amazing. Thanks again.
Thank you.
That's it for today. Thanks for listening. If you want advice about your hookups, relationships, or sex life, drop me an email at sexlife@kcrw.org. How's Your Sex Life is a KCRW original podcast. Our producer is Andrea Bautista. Our executive producer is Gina Delvac. This episode was recorded by Hope Bresch. Our music was created by Carolyn Pennypacker Riggs. Special thanks to Women's Audio Mission, Arnie Seipel, and Jennifer Farrow. And as always, a huge thanks to our voice actors. We'll let them introduce themselves on the way out.
This is Gina Delvac. Thanks for listening.
I'm Raghu Manavalan. If you like this episode, share it with a friend.
This is Ariana Morgenstern. See you next time for another episode of How's Your Sex Life?